Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the From the Shadows podcast. This is Shane Grove, your host. And I want to give a quick update to everybody on Jason, the super producer. He is out of the hospital. So he is, he's, I think, on his way to recovery a little bit. So he wants me to let everybody know to keep him in your thoughts and prayers. He really appreciates all the messages and stuff he's gotten from all the listeners and fans here the last couple of weeks. And he's still got a long road of recovery ahead of him, but we all know Jason's a tough dude. He's gonna pull through. So we all appreciate everybody's concern and well wishes. So before we bring our guest on, I want to remind everybody that if you want to get a hold of us, just to say hi, or if you got a story or something you want to share, you can find us at From the Shadows Podcast on Facebook. You can go to our forum page on Facebook called After the Shadows. You can get a hold of me at Shane Grove Author on Instagram, or the From the Shadows Podcast Instagram page, or do it the old-fashioned way. Go to our website, fromtheshadowspodcast.com, hit the contact page, send us an email. I promise I'll read it and get back to you. And you know, if you get a good story, we'd love to have you on the show. So, and for everybody that can't get enough of what we do, you can check us out on our Patreon page, From the Shadows Podcast. We usually get all the episodes up commercial free a day early, or at least a night early, and then we do some extra content for everybody a couple times a month, as much as we can pull ourselves together and do it, because we're all busy and it never seems to be enough time. So with that, I want to introduce our guest, who comes highly recommended by a couple of our former guests. Since I first made contact with this gentleman, he has sent me some of the craziest pictures, sound recordings of some of his encounters. So I can't wait to bring him on, have him tell about those encounters and share some of this stuff with you guys. So all the way from what sounds like the worst place in the world to live, from Australia, we got Yowie Dan. How you doing, Yowie Dan?
Good, thank you. Anyone that calls me a gentleman, I like him, so it's
And I don't mean to put down Australia, but because it sounds beautiful, and I do have some lots of friends there, but man, we're talking about how hot it was, and you know, it seems like every other thing can kill you in Australia. Every other kind of animal seems like they grow bigger and meaner down there. So it makes me totally terrified of ever visiting.
Yeah, we don't really come into contact with a lot of the dangerous animals unless we go out into the bush. Like, we don't get them. It's not like there's kangaroos and brown snakes going around our house. But if you're somewhere near the bush, or your house is near any kind of bushland, then you've got to be very careful of the brown snakes and the funnel web spiders that can kill you as well. So, yeah.
Oh, geez. I'm going to write that down on the list of more things that sound crazy. Jeez. So I want to hear how, first of all, how you got into the whole Bigfoot. Well, you guys call him Yowie over there.
I want Yowie, to know
how you got interested into that, because I don't know a lot about how, the Australians, you know, like we can kind of trace back in our modern history here in the United States, from some of the sightings and then the Patty film, you know, from the 40s and 50s and some of the stories, and kind of when Bigfoot in the modern age here in the United States kind of came into the forefront. What's the background in Australia?
Well, when the first settlers arrived in 1788, not long after that, there was accounts of people seeing what they called a gorilla. They were calling it gorillas because that's all they knew what a big ape was, a gorilla. And so then various accounts from all over New South Wales and Queensland, and even down to our nation's capital, Canberra, which is pretty much inside of New South Wales. And there was old newspaper reports of people seeing these, you know, gorillas or hairy men. So it's been around for a lot of years. And then not until you're looking into the 1970s, where a man called Rex Gilroy was saying, you know, he's finding casts of big feet, like Bigfoot, and he's, you know, and they're calling it the Yowie. So Rex was pretty much the first, pretty much the pioneer of the first researcher that was doing anything, and he kind of stuck his neck out to say, hey, these things are here. But people would laugh and, you know, make a bit of a joke. But after that, and especially when Facebook, and you got Facebook groups and people are talking, and more and more people are opening up and telling their story. The Dean Harrison, who runs, if you look up a website called Australian Yowie Research, and there's just countless reports from every state in Australia from different time periods, some from the older generation that seen these things when they were young in the 1930s and 1940s or 50s and up till now. And that's like a library of our history of reports. So, and Dean's done a great job at doing that, because otherwise these stories would be lost. But where I come into it is basically, I used to train greyhounds. I had a couple of greyhounds that I bred myself in the back of my house. So I had 10 pups running around, and they just chewed everything. There was nothing green or a plant alive after they would run around the backyard, I'll tell you now. So, and my mum wasn't quite happy of that. But anyway, they grew back. But anyway, I went to a place called Appin, A-P-P-I-N, and it's about 60, 70 k south of Sydney, and there's like a trail track. It's a straight track, and you use it to run your dogs up the straight. So it's like riding a bike. When you get first on the bike, you don't have your balance. Well, greyhounds aren't really balanced to run really, really fast when they're young. They've got to get used to running fast. So that's what this track was used for. And I'm down the bottom of the track, and it's really bushy in that area. And you could trace the bush from there, and you could walk all the way through patches of bush, through farmland, and make your way back to the Blue Mountains without being seen. So that's what I've seen after this, you know, my encounter there happened. So I was waiting for my turn to trial my dog, and it probably was going to be about 40 minutes of wait. And my greyhound Sally, she'd never barked. She was a quiet dog. I used to think, oh, did you lose your bark? Did, you know, weren't you born with one? Used to joke about that. Because greyhounds, yeah. And one thing about dogs with the greyhounds, when the lure goes, that noise, they just concentrate on that noise. So when she turned around and put herself in between me and the bush, which was a couple of meters behind the starting boxes, and started barking like really frantically, and the hair stood up all over her body like she'd been electrified. I was kind of wondering, like, what's going on, Sally? And like, Pat, and I'm like, what's going on? Are you okay? And I'm thinking, if it was like a rabbit or a little, some little animal, she'd try to get it, you know, because they're taught to chase. And so she's like, yeah, barking frantically, and I'm like, what's going on? Next minute, this gum tree that's probably 20 foot high and the trunk's nearly as thick as a basketball, and it's just getting like thrown around left to right. You can hear the big roots on the bottom cracking, you know, it's going bang, bang. And I'm just like, is there like a bulldozer in there? Like, what's going on? But I couldn't hear any noise. It was just that tree cracking. And then, well, I don't really follow the wrestling that you guys have over there now, but back in the day when I was younger, in the 80s, Andre the Giant was the biggest guy around, and he had a massive chest. So something with the size of that chest or bigger expelled all this, you know, just this sound that come out, and it's just like, rawr, and I'm just like, what the hell? And I just took off with the dog, and we went ran about 200 meters away to the other boxes, and we're like, did you guys see that? Look at the tree. You know, they got ripped out of the ground, and I couldn't stop talking. And they go, you look, you like you've seen a ghost. And I'm like, when they go, look at your dog. And I'm like, yeah, something just screamed at us and nearly ripped that tree out of the ground. I'm like, there's no machinery down there, to one of the guys working. I asked him, he goes, no, it's just full bush. So that's where it happened for me. And I was listening to one of your podcasts earlier yesterday, and there was one of the guys was talking about watching the old Leonard Nimoy In Search Of. Well,
yeah,
we had that over here as well, and I used to watch it used to be on Sundays at 6:30 in the afternoon, and I used to watch it every week, and I used to go to bed scared, and we had the blankets over my head, but I kept watching it every week. And I'll tell you now, to this day, the Bigfoot episode with that music is the most spookiest episode you'll ever want to watch, and you won't want to go out in the dark after you watch that because of that music. And so that's where my passion started, and that's where my story and Dean Harrison said to me once it's in your blood, you're never going to get rid of it. You're going to be looking for yowies, or just be interested in just looking what other people have done, you know, until you're dead. And he's true. Like, I can't stop trying to look. My mission is trying to find what this thing is. And I've had a few encounters, and I've had some really interesting things happen along the way, and I've met some great people that have become like my best friends. So yeah, that's where it all started for me.
But at the time where you're now, you made it sound like you and the dog ran together up the thing. Now, I've been around greyhounds, and if you're telling me right now that you could run with that greyhound, then we're signing you up for a rugby or football or whatever you guys
do. Mate, I beat him. I could have beat Usain Bolt, mate. I could have been Usain Bolt at 100 meters. Because, yeah, she was a bit freaked out, so she was more in a trot. And I was more in, you know, like that heavy breathing, because I wasn't that fit. Oh, yeah. Rang up when I got to the other boxes, yeah. And, yeah, it was just like everything happened. It seemed like it was only 10 seconds, you know, it happened that quick, but it was over probably a 25, 30 second period. But when it did make that big scream, what I forgot to say is when it ran off, it was like massive sledgehammers hitting dirt ground, like that big thuds, and the bush was just getting like smashed out of the way. And I could see big trees kind of like just shaking as this thing was just making its way through the bush like a bulldozer. And I was just like, well, what's this thing? Like, I'm going to look up. So straight away, and this is 2005, and I've been nearly doing research in two more years. It's 20 years, so two decades worth of research. And I looked up yowies. That's the first thing I seen. It's got to be a yowie. And I'm thinking, these things are really only a indigenous Dreamtime story, which might not be true, or a chocolate. So I'm looking at, and I found the Australian Yowie Research, and I contacted Dean and told him a story, and I've just gone from there.
Now that place where you were, did you come to find out that there were other stories that just hadn't been, you know, weren't common knowledge? Did you find out that, because to me, you know, we hear a lot of stories about how they're attracted to dogs. And if that's a dog track and people are taking out their greyhounds and whatever other dogs they may want to run, I mean, that would only naturally maybe draw in those Yowies to that area.
Yeah, well, I did in 2017 to, I think, 2020, I did do an online magazine called the Yowie Times. And I'm sure there's two reports that people gave me, that one was actually a guy that I know, he was driving down there in the 1980s with his girlfriend coming back from Wollongong, which is south of there, back because they lived in that region, and one ran across the road right in front of him, and he told his brothers and they all laughed at him, you know, saying, "You seen something?" He goes, "No, I nearly swerved off the road and crashed my car." And it's a dangerous area, Appin Road, because it's just these big, massive gum trees right next to the road. So if you veer off the road or swerve, you're going to hit one of these gum trees 100%. Like, there's a lot of people died along that road because it is dangerous. And then later on, the brothers that laughed at him went on a ride with their horses. And they're going down a trail, and one crossed from one side of the trail to the other right in front of them, and they all saw it, and they all went back to him and said, "We're not laughing no more. We just saw one as well." So they have been seen down in that area, and yeah, within probably a good 10 or 15 kilometers around that area as well. So there's a lot of reports from the Royal National Park, which is pretty much not far from there.
Now, when we started talking, you said that there were reports from the, you know, as far back as the late 1700s.
That's the 1800s it was. Yeah, when 1800, because the first fleet, which is where Australia started, you know, Captain Cook come out here in 1770, and he said, yeah, you know, England needed to send all their convicts somewhere because there was too many of them. They're all sitting in all these hulks, you know, on the Thames. So they sent them over here, and the first fleet turned up in 1788. And then it took a while for them to start spreading out. So you're looking at probably a good 20, 30 years before they started getting right into the bush. And that's when the reports started happening in the 1820s, 1830s.
Well, it's just funny, is I got a couple, just in the last couple of weeks, I've had a couple articles sent to me that people found from the late 1800s here in America that were talking about wild hairy men, you know, and went into great detail, great description about these things and how they, you know, and it wasn't just one person in these small villages and towns here in the United States where this stuff was happening. You know, it was a couple of, one of them was three or four different eyewitnesses came forward. And what always struck me was it's one thing today, you know, where, you know, you're sending me pictures and it takes 2 seconds to get here from Australia. Okay. But how is somebody in the 1800s going to know what's going on in Australia? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Going on in Australia and make up copycat stories and kind of piggyback off of something that's going on the other side of the world. And so when you hear those, you know, old original stories from Australia and over in Russia and China, you know, it's just like, okay, so something's been going on for hundreds, if not thousands of years. And it can't be like everybody that's had these stories in Australia, they can't even just be making them up. There's got to be something to these stories, you know, especially the ones from hundreds of years ago. You know, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me for people to say this is just nonsense, you know.
Well, you look at all the indigenous people from from Australia and like North America and all over Europe, they've all got the same stories as well. And they've been around for a long time living in these areas. So the Aboriginals here, they've been living in Australia, they're saying up to 100,000 years or longer. So they've lived alongside these creatures and, you know, they've become to know them pretty well. And then once the Europeans come in, then that was all kind of lost. And then it was like a, you know, a big brother's come in and says, nah, this is the way things are going to be. So the, what they had organized is all, it's all out the window now. So, you know, cause the Aboriginals here and the Yowies, so the Yowies looked after the forest, and then, you know, the Aboriginals would look after the land with doing backburning. And so, you know, would keep the food happening, because Australian bush had needs to get burnt for it to reproduce seeds. Some seeds will only open here unless it's high temperatures around them, and then they open up and then seeds fall out. And if that doesn't happen, the seed doesn't come out unless it gets broken open by something like a rock fall or something, or the tree falls over and it happens to get crushed. But yeah, going back to the stories, yeah, so there's not only the Europeans and the white people telling stories back in where there's no Facebook, there's no you know, mobile phones. And how does one story from like 1850 from America get to Australia in 1830? It doesn't, you know, or vice versa, you know. So, you know, 1850 in America, 1850 here, it just doesn't happen. It would have to get on a boat and take, you know, 8 or 9 months or 18 months to get here. So that's how far away we are from everyone, you know, with the boat. So, yeah, that's what's really mind-boggling, mate, where, you know, these stories were already out there way before, you know, Europeans moved into North America and Australia. So
the origin story then in Australia is the Aboriginal people kind of lived side by side with these creatures, and they each had a, I don't want to say job to do, but they each had you know, an importance to helping the other out, so to speak, as far as living. Okay. So now what do those people have to say today? Like, are they still experiencing, you know, cause I mean, there's still parts of their culture still living out in the middle of nowhere. And are they still living side by side with these creatures and helping them out, or is that kind of changed?
Well, they still have an understanding, but it has changed because of the white man, you know. So the way things were getting done for, you know, thousands of years all changed, where, you know, the populations of the indigenous fell away, where, you know, they had fights with the European settlers, and, you know, the Europeans had guns, so they were shooting the indigenous people. And you look at Tasmania, there's no Tasmanian Aboriginals left. They all died. They all got moved away from that area. So the understanding is still there in parts, but not like it was. And, you know, it's a sad thing, because they worked together and kept the land, it made food for everyone. And so, but that's how things change, and it's unfortunate.
Well, so let's jump back into then your journey. Then, so you get scared to death. You talk to Dean Harrison, right?
Yeah.
And so does he kind of like say, hey, you had an experience now, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to go, you're going to just let it go, or are you going to go, chase down another experience and see if you can get some more proof?
No, I didn't really talk to him. It was just through messages. And I just kind of thought to myself, like, after watching all those, you know, there's plenty of Bigfoot documentaries over the years and In Search Of, and, you know, watching him growing up. And I was just thinking that nothing like that would ever happen to me. You know, it was just, you know, I'm taking a dog to a racetrack to trial. I'm not, you know, not in my wildest dreams that I think something would nearly rip a tree out of the ground, scream at me like, big roar, like I can't even get anywhere near what the sound it made. And then, bash its way through the bush that would, if I ran through there like that, it'd scratch the hell out of me. There's some plants in Australia just so, you know, just thorns and vines and everything. And, you know, so that's where it started. And so I just thought, all right, I'll look up where there's a hot spot, and I'm right at my doorstep, the Blue Mountains. It's like the biggest hot spot in Australia. So I thought, I'll go up there and I'll start do some hiking and I'll try and see what I can find. So, and at that time, the Australian Yowie Research Forum, there's a forum where people ask questions and people answer and people give out their findings and whatever they want to do, whatever they want to give out. Some people, a lot of people don't want to share stuff, and I think that happens in America where you get something, you want to keep it to yourself and all that kind of stuff. And that's how it is with this kind of, in this, what I call the Yowie world, you know. So, so I just went out and started looking for things, and then there was a guy here called his name is Rusty. He's got a really good YouTube channel called The Rusty 222, triple two, three numbers. If you watch The Rusty 222, he puts out like CCTV cameras and that like videotape 1 kilometer away for weeks on end. So something might walk through there, he captures it. So yeah, he was doing stuff like that. So I kind of learned from the guys that were already out there doing stuff, and I took a bit from each person, and I kind of, you know, everyone has their own way they research, but I took a little bit from this person, a little bit from that person, and molded it up into what I thought was my best chance of getting any sort of, you know, footage or recordings. So I went out and put sound recorders out, and I actually went out to areas and camped by myself in the bush, I'd hike 3 or 4 or 5 hours along trails and go bush bashing for a kilometer or two and just be out in the middle of the bush going, here I am, where I is. And I did get some action, and which kept me going back to them areas. But what you want to do, you just don't want to just keep going back and annoying these creatures. So I'd only research areas for a certain amount of time, and then I'd give them a rest and I'd go somewhere else. And it might take a year or two before I come back, because if you keep on doing that, and setting up, you know, trail cameras and sound recorders and keep on walking through their home base, basically, they're going to leave and go somewhere else. So it's going to be tough to find them.
I gotcha. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense, you know, but I know we have some researchers over here that have just, you know, identified an area and just basically are there all the time. See, their thought process is that these family units will become used to them and come closer and maybe let their guard down. So it's interesting to see your thought process is, I got to give them some space so they don't leave.
But look, I'm not saying anyone's way is wrong or right. It's just the way, like I said, I molded the way I believe that it's going to be best for me. And see, our creature here, the Yowie, could be quite different in its mannerisms to the Bigfoot. But the Bigfoot over there might not care. He might say, oh, well, there's a little humans there, I don't care. I'm going to still walk from A to B to go do my hunting and then come home. Where the Yowies, they're a little bit fickle in that way. That's what I believe anyway. And that's what's been actually working for me. So I'm going to keep on using that structure and keep on researching that way.
So you're going on record to say that every single Yowie is a female? Then, because oh, every female listening just rolled their eyes and they're like, okay, how am I going to say?
Don't hate me. You said it. I didn't say it.
Oh, they know I'm kidding. So let's get into some of your experiences, because I mean, you got some. Like I said at the beginning, you've sent me some really cool sound files of that, just, you know, just are unbelievable to me.
Yeah, so which one do you want to talk about first?
We'll play the one walking one where I think it's the one where is that the wood walking, the wood knocking one where you ask, did you hear that?
Yeah, that was at a place called Bungonia National Park, which is near Canberra, which is about 3 hours south of here.
So we'll take a second here and we'll play it for everybody.
Did you hear that? I've got a big wood knock.
Okay, so set that up because you're obviously out there camping in the middle of, you know, describe where you're at when you hear this noise and what you're thinking after you hear it.
Well, I was down at a place called Bungonia National Park, and it was actually pretty cold. And in that national park, they don't let you light campfires because of the risk of the bush is so dry down there, the risk of bushfire. So we end up just having like a heater, a gas heater thing out there, which worked quite well for us. But we're on a lookout. It was my wife and two friends, David Reed, who researches in the Canberra area, and another friend of his called Vlad. So we're on this lookout, and I've got my parabolic dish, which is from a place in America called Wildtronics, and I've got the headphones on, and I've got the noise-canceling headphones, so I can't hear anything else but what's coming through the sound recorder. And this is the first, I think, 10 or 15 seconds I ever used it. I used it like practicing, like just out front of my house listening to cars and birds, so I got used to it. But in actual research, in a real situation where I'm using it to try and hear something, it was like 10-15 seconds. I've hit record, and I've just asked everyone to be quiet, because even if you walk anywhere near this 10-20-30 meters, if you make some sort of noise, it gets picked up in this dish. It's really sensitive. It's really good. And so I've pointed it down in the valley. And this valley is really steep, and there's no trails there. Like, it is like really steep. I've sent you a photo exactly where it was pointed down into. And pretty much after 10 seconds, there was a wood knock. And I just said to them, "Did you guys hear that wood knock?" And they went, "No." So it come from pretty far down in the valley, and it's a crystal clear wood knock. I've never recorded one as clear as that before.
And those guys didn't hear it. Nobody else heard it. Just you. Not that.
Just with the parabolic, yeah. Yeah, and there was no wind in that area. There was a little bit windy around like another side, but there was no wind getting into there. So it could not have been a tree hitting a tree, because they do sound like that on occasions. But it was still in that area, so I don't know what tree hit what. But, yeah, to me, yeah, that's a clear wood knock.
So it's really like, as soon as as you were saying that, what really crossed my mind was okay, did that thing know you guys were there? And was kind of, is that its way of communicating to another one? And imagine if you don't have that dish, you have no idea there's one that close. Because, I mean, no matter how far away, I mean, it had to be close enough, close enough that you don't want to not know it's there. You know what I'm saying? So if you don't have that dish, you don't know that one's talking to another one, if that's what they were doing. And that they were that close to you.
Well, we only heard that. Yeah, we only heard that one. Well, I only heard that one wood knock, and we didn't hear or see anything else that night. And it was getting pretty cold, so we had to go back to our campsite, and we pretty much just stayed there the rest of the night. And then it started raining. So, but it's good if you go out and you can get one thing like that, it does make things worthwhile. But there's plenty of times we go out and we get absolutely nothing.
And it's just raining on you.
Yeah. We had tents up. We just jumped in our tents and said, "All right, let's go to sleep." So that's what we did.
Now, I want to play, before we get to the one really good one, I want to play some of these. I want to play one of them. Yeah, of the walking.
Is it one? Is that one from Glenbrook?
Yeah, from Glenbrook.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll play here and then we'll... Describe that, because that is obvious, like, where you're at, and because it's obvious there's something moving. So
yeah,
So describe like where exactly you're at and the circumstances.
Well, this is an area I happened to find. At Glenbrook is the first suburb you come to when you come to the top of the Blue Mountains. And so I only went to Glenbrook because I knew this trail was an easy trail, not too hard. And I'd recently had a Achilles tendon operation 3 months prior, and I was a bit jealous all the boys were going out and talking about stuff on AYR, and so I wanted to just go out. So yeah, my physio told me off later, like I could have tore the tendon off the back of the bone and stuff like that. But anyway, I took the risk, and so I went out there and was doing some research, and it took me a while to get down to this area. It's a little bit tricky, and so I thought I'd set some sound recorders up and see what I get. So anyway, I've come back, and so what happened is something's come running around the rock ledge, and it's probably the top of that little ledge to the bottom of the creek is you're probably looking at 2 to 2.5 meters. So I don't think there's many people that want to jump down over 2 meters down to the bottom of a creek. You could bust your ankles or your knees. So then you hear it thud on the creek bed, and then you hear it walking through the water, and the water's gurgling around its feet. And this is freezing cold water that's pretty much like -3 conditions at about 3:30 in the morning. So yeah, it gets really cold up in the Blue Mountains for Australia. So I don't know who's doing that at 3 o'clock in the morning. So but I had a lot of recordings and a lot of weird happenings in this area. So for what I think, the Yowies were coming from the area that it crossed over to. And the other area, there's a campground called Euroka, and there's a lot of people that camp there. So I think people are throwing food in the rubbish and that, and they're probably going through the rubbish eating the leftovers, and that's why they're going from A to B.
Holy smokes. So this is one of those instances where by process of elimination, there's only a few things that are out there doing walking around at night like that.
Yeah, well, look, the nocturnal animals in Australia, you got wombat. Well, in wombats, like a big fat tank, mini tank, like it's not jumping off anything. It's that slow. He just walks around eating grass. You got your possums, which is not going to make that noise. Possums don't run around like that. They're up in the trees. They do run around on the ground, but they don't jump off rock ledges and make thuds on the bottom of the creek. They're not that heavy. Kangaroos, mate, you can tell, and there's no kangaroos in that area. It's too rocky. Kangaroos are more in a grassy area. There's the rock wallabies, but they don't move around as much as at night as they do in the daytime. Plus, a hopping to a bipedal walking sounds different. You can tell that's something on two legs, bipedal running or walking, not hopping. So there's nothing else out there other than a human and a Yowie that would do that. So I don't know what human's going to be out there in that freezing cold conditions. And this is not an easy area to find anyway.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Yeah, now that was one where you just left the recorder and left the area.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, just left it for a week.
And you know who else? So I know the Olympic Project out in Washington, they do that sort of thing too. Rather than put up the cameras, they put out like little recorders in this area that they have discovered, like what they believe is nesting sites and stuff. And it's amazing. Like it's almost like the ghost creatures do everything they can to avoid a trail camera or any kind of camera you put up, but it's like they don't even care about a recorder. You know, they'll walk right up to it or by it. And it's almost like they're trying to, make noise so that you can hear it, you know? And you would think that just that a recorder and a camera just in and of itself being out in the wilderness would somehow alert them to that something's a little strange. If you're that sensitive as an animal or if you have that kind of instinct.
Well, one thing I found between a sound recorder and a trail camera will make a noise. The human ear can't hear it. When I recorded some howls at Marimara, I left a sound recorder on top of the trail camera. And during the recording, you can hear the trail camera wind and click every time I took a photo. But you can't hear that with the human ears. So are they hearing trail cameras working, making, you know, the mechanism inside working where we can't hear it because it's so soft, but can they hear that and thinking, what's making that noise? That's weird. It's something we don't know. We're not going to go near it. But a sound recorder, you press record, it just doesn't make those noises. So it could be something as simple as that.
Interesting. That's interesting. I mean, I it's fascinating to me all the different approaches that you guys and girls out there, like doing the real research, have thought of, you know, to try to capture some sort of evidence or whatever. And obviously you're capturing some good stuff audio wise for sure. I mean, now I'm going to play the how, because I think that is one of the best, one of the best recordings I've heard of some creature out there that I don't know what it is, making a noise. So we'll play it, and then we can, I want you to describe it, and I'll tell you what I think it sounds like, and we'll go from there. So we just played the howl. So tell me, I mean, and I told you before, that to me sounds like you were in Ohio. It captured the infamous Ohio howl.
You're gonna have to send me that, because I've never heard the Ohio howl. I've heard, I think there's one from Washington.
You've never heard the Ohio howl, and I don't want to say. I mean, I think Matt Moneymaker is the one that captured it, but I don't want to say that for sure because I don't know. I should know, but I'll find it and send it to you, because I think it sounds, I think it's, well, I'll tell you what, we'll put it in right in here and we'll let people hear both of them and see what they think. I think they sound very similar. Yeah, it sounds like you were in Ohio.
No, I was in New South Wales, and in the state I live in. So they set up the situation where we were. The reason why I went to this area, because a friend of mine, Heath, he was fishing on the Hawkesbury River, which this Marramarra National Park is pretty much right on the edge of the Hawkesbury River. But the campground that we went to is like a little creek. It's called Marramarra Creek, and that runs off into Bedford Creek, and then Bedford Creek runs off in directly into the Hawkesbury River. And that's the main river there in that system. So he was on the Hawkesbury River, and he had something happen to him really weird. And he said to me, look, you might pay to go to that area and have a look around. There's been some sightings and some weird things happening over the years. So I'm like, all right, where's the closest I can get to that? And I went, well, I found this campground called Marramarra, and it's about a 7-kilometer hike to get there because they closed the gate off, the fire trail gate. So only the national parks and, like, if there's a fire there, the fire engines and the police can go down there when they open the gate. So it just stops people going down there and being stupid and wrecking things. So I find that campers in generally and hikers are decent people and just there for good reasons, like hiking and camping and not trying to be an idiot. So basically, you've got to hike in there, you got to carry all your stuff, you've got to carry your water, your food, your tent, everything, clothes. So we get down there. There was a friend of mine, Roger, at the time, and we had a few things happen 2 weeks prior to this day. So I went back there with another friend called Adam and my wife. And my wife's Filipino, and she wasn't too sure that these things were real. She thought that, you know, we're just kind of, you know, playing a joke on her. So she came out, and it gets to a quarter past 11. I remember it because I looked at my phone and I said to Adam, sorry, mate, last 2 weeks ago, this place was going off. It was going crazy. It was wood knocks. There was like noises that we couldn't understand what animal it came from. Because when you go out in the bush, you understand what noises are. You guys get coyotes and wolves and bears and cougars. You kind of know the noises. We're here, you know, there's all different noises. And the one that makes the most noise is foxes. You know, they scream and that, and people get really like, oh, what's that? But foxes make a lot of noises. But you come to know what noises possums make and koalas and everything else. They're more just grunts and growls. And it is weird if you're not going out there to research and you're just going for camping and these things are grunting and growling. You think, what's out here? So people get scared. And it is a pretty spooky area at night. It gets really dark and really quiet. So I'm about to open up my tent to say, sorry, Adam, this place was going off. I put my finger on the tent, unzip it. Next minute, this thing just starts howling. And I had a smaller parabolic dish, a cheaper version, and this is what I mostly recorded it all on. And it started howling on and off for about, I'd say about half an hour to 40 minutes. And the howls that we end up hearing, it was like, you know, you're there yelling out to say to your mates, where are you? I'm lost. So it end up coming down the ridge, which there's no trail and it's just solid bush, coming down that ridge over a period of time as it was howling probably every 5 minutes. And when it did howl, you know, when you hear dogs get to the end of their lung capacity when they're making a howl or a bark and they kind of, at the end, you kind of wavers. Well, this one, when it howled from up and down, when it did its sequence of howls, mate, it was just punching it out strong where it had more left than its lungs. And the sound recording doesn't do justice of how loud this was. And no person would do this. They're, you know, it's like when you blow balloons up after you might do three or four balloons and you start going, oh, my lungs have like, they've had it. I haven't got no, I can't do it no more because it's hurting my lungs. Where this thing was just doing it constantly. And we didn't hear anything else reply or any other noises. And about 100 meters away from us was another couple camping. And I've come good friends with him. His name's Kurt. And we've gone back to Maramara a few times since and recorded some really weird, really weird sounds there that we can't say what they are. But on this day, it come across the tidal creek, which was about chest high. And this was in June, which is winter time for us. And it's really cold because I walked across the creek in the next day where I had my sound recorder on top of the trail camera. And I didn't have any shoes on. And I had to come back and put my feet over the fire because I nearly got frostbite, or they were freezing cold and was hurting. So you wouldn't be walking through there at like 11 o'clock at night. You wouldn't be walking. I wouldn't go in the water in the daytime. It was that cold. So it come across. And when we heard it come across the other side, there's long grass there and ferns that sometimes they get to about as high as someone that's about 6 foot tall. So you could easily hide in there. But we heard that. And while this was all happening, my wife was like throwing heaps of wood on the fire. She was freaking out. Kurt had got out of his tent to start a fire as well. And he said to me later on when we talked the next day that, look, he's been out in the bush, shooting wild pigs and all that. He goes, I've heard all these noises that all these wild animals make. I've never heard that before. He was like, what the hell is that? And he goes, that was loud. So he asked us what we're there for, and we told him, and he says, I'm really interested in that, can I join you? And I said, yeah, if you want to come out with me, you can come out. So we've become good friends since then. And so when he's come out and put the fire on, you know, his girlfriend was freaking out in the tent, like, what's this going, what's this screaming? He said they could hear it walking around through the grass the other side of their tent, probably within about 20 meters. So we've shone our torches that way. We had really bright torches that just light up the bush like daytime. And he's looked around at us like they've heard the same thing. So he's pointed his torch in, and then we're following it going through the bush, but we couldn't see it. And then it just ran up this ridge that would take us about at least 40 minutes to climb back out. It's the way that we get out. And this thing's gone up there within about 10 seconds and gone. And so I've just went straight away, we've got to come back here again. So we've been going back there in wintertime only because there's no snakes and there's no people there at wintertime. So it's the best time for us to go there.
So the night you recorded the howl, Kurt and his girlfriend were about 100 meters away, and they heard the howl like close to them. Like it was not like right up on you, but it was right up next to them.
Yeah, no. When it was howling, it was on the other side of the Maramara Creek, which in that area, it's about, you'd say up to about 15 meters wide, and it come from nearly the top of the ridge, because that's when we first heard it, was up this ridge, which was just solid like rainforesty kind of bush, and it gradually made its way down slowly. It wasn't doing it fast. Like I said, it took about 40 minutes for it to get over the creek, but once it come through the creek and went over the bush, it never made any noises. And we just hear something big going through the grass, and then it end up going up the ridge, running up the ridge and gone. And it made all the howls before it got to the creek.
So you've been out chasing these things, obviously very close to them. Why do you think it announced its presence and then kept coming to check you guys out?
I think it was going back from, you know, finding food in an area and then going back home. So it was probably calling out and hoping it would get a reply from, you know, its family members or its tribe or whatever you want to call them. But because we were there, the fire we had was only really small, and it gets really dark there. And, yeah, Kurt and his girlfriend were already in the tent quiet. we were just sitting around the campfire talking, and we weren't talking that loud. We're just, you know, talking. We're trying to be as quiet as we could. So if we heard something in one ear coming from one side of, you know, from where we were sitting, we could go, oh, quick, let's go over there and we'll get the parabolic and we'll try and listen to see what it is. So we're being quiet. So it mightn't have known we were there and called out. And then, but it could have just been, I don't care. There's people here all the time, which there is. There's people camping there all year round. And it just went, I'm announcing myself, I don't care. But when it come through the tidal creek and into the grass, it ran really quick. Like it did go really quick. It was only a matter of 15 seconds by the time it come out of the water to by the time it got up to that ridge, which would have taken us a long time to get up there.
Well, it's just interesting behavior. Like, you know, like if these creatures like don't want to be seen, seemingly, like why announce, you know, hey, I'm coming, unless it didn't know you were there. So it's just we. Hey, look, I don't care what it's doing. If I'm out there and I hear that yell or that noise, I'm not there. I'm already gone before it gets there.
Like, oh no, mate! No, we were the opposite, mate. It was that we had like a the national parks put up like a picnic table and that, and we were like sitting on that, resting our hands on the table with the parabolic dishes, and we're looking at Adam, myself, we're looking at each other, and we had the biggest smiles on our faces, going, yeah, keep buddy, keep howling. Oh, we loved it. It was the best.
Yeah, but you Australians are a lot tougher than some of us Midwest Ohio people. You know, I mean, come on. Oh, man. So what is, like, have you had any, like, visual sightings other than, like, seeing the tree and stuff shaking? Have you had the opportunity to actually lay your eyes on one of these creatures?
Well, I recorded one in 2013, and my YouTube channel is Yowie Dan's Australian Yowie, and there's one called the Glenbrook Yowie, and I think I've pin stuck it, so it's the first video. And there's a rock ledge there that's about, I've measured it up to 3 meters tall, about nearly 12 foot in some areas. And I was down there when I put the sound recorders out and had my ankle operation, and I did not see this one, but I recorded it in the background. It's like standing next to this big rock formation, and you can only see the top bit of it. It's about from its like shoulders to its head, but the rest of it's all covered with thick bush. And I've shown you the pictures there of that rock ledge.
That's from that video.
So the rock ledge, you see one of my mates, he's on his hands and knees. That was actually Heath, he one that said go to the Hawkesbury area, and he wanted to come and check out the area. So he's got his hands on his knees and he's looking down, and it makes him look like a little kid. That's how big it is. And then like there's nothing else there that's that tall. Nothing's 10 foot taller or you know, in Australia. So I didn't see it or smell it, but I caught it in the background, and I watched that video 4 or 5 times before I picked that up. And this was back in 2013. So I was researching that area a little bit, and before I stopped researching it, I walked along the trail to go in, and something started paralleling me, and I heard some indigenous kind of voices around, which is like, they call it samurai chatter, which is like the Yowie's making talk, but it sounds like an indigenous speech. And it sounded like kids, and then it sounded like teenage girls, and then it sounded like adults. And I was like, it was raining and foggy, but I was like, what the hell's going on? And so I walk along the trail, and this thing's paralleling me in the bush, and I'm thinking, is that just a wallaby, and it's just happened to be going the same way? But over about a 700 to 800 meter hike along this trail, it would stop when I stopped, and then it would walk when I walked, and it didn't sound like hopping. And I'm like, something's there. So I went, I know that where there's an area where it's more like paper bark trees and there's less thick bush. When I get there, I'll get the camera ready and see if I can get it. So anyway, when it got there, I've been really bad with the camera back then. I was overshooting it because it was kind of a bit higher than what I was. And I was overshooting it, and I was actually pointing to the top of the trees, not down the bottom where it was kind of looking around, looking at me. And this was as these are ones called Junjudis, and they're only about 3 foot tall. That's as tall as they get. And they look like they're about a 10-year-old kid. And they've got small lips and noses, and then they've got little features. And it was just looking at around me. And I thought it was just like a bulge in a tree where some sort of insects got in there, and it's made the tree kind of looking. They trees here, sometimes they bulge out because of the insects in them. And or the worms or something. Anyway, I'm looking at this thing, and I'm thinking, it's about 8 meters away, and it's raining and it's foggy. And I look in, and I'm like, is that what I think it is? And then it blinked, and it just moved its head about an inch. And then I just started picking up all the features, and all the hair started standing up on the back of my neck. And I got that kind of like a weird feeling. And I'm just going, and I just remember saying, my heart's beating now. And I'm like, oh, duh, it's always beating. But it was like meant to say it's beating hard. And like, holy hell, I've seen one now. They're real. And I just started picking out features on it. And but I never really got it on camera because I kept overshooting. And by the time it was like really small. It was behind a small, like it was the thickest tree there, but it was only a small creature. And like the top of its head would only come to my chest. And I'm like just about 6 foot tall. So it's only half as tall as me, really small. And then from then on, I went, yeah, they are real. What I heard and encountered is real. But this one, why is it so small? And then I didn't know there were smaller ones. And after that, I was at a place called the Wadigans with Adam. And it's north, about 3 hours north of Sydney. And there's a lot of people there during the daytime, but we're in a campsite where there was people, you know, yahooing and that. So we walked over a ridge and went to another area. And I said, well, I want to go down to the creek to see what I can find because, you know, where there's water, there's life. Where we're up on the ridge, it was dry and bone dry. So he goes, I'll stay up here. So I've gone down there. It's about 200 meters to get down. There's vines and everything. And it's really hard to get down. But I got to the bottom and I said to him, something just growled at me. And we've got little walkie-talkies. And I'm going, something growled at me. He's like, yeah, sure. I said, I'm telling you, something just growled at me. I'm like, hope it's not a wild dog. And then it just took off up the ridge, and I'm like, I couldn't see it. It was like all these leaves went flying everywhere. And I go, well, it's coming up to you now. And he's going, what? And then he goes, I can hear it. I can hear it. And then, so I started climbing back up. Then I can hear something running along the ridge from my left to the right. Then I can hear something about 10 seconds later running the same after it. So the first one was the Yowie. The second one was Adam. So I finally got up there up the top, take me 10 minutes to get up there. And we're still talking on the walkie-talkies, and Adam's going, there's people camping here, but I've lost sight of it. But he said to me, which was something really funny and people have said before, he goes, it's like it's running. I can see all the leaves moving, and because there's a lot of the gum trees throw a lot of leaf matter on the ground. And he goes, it's running and these things are flicking up, but I can't see it. He goes, it's invisible. And I'm like, what? And he goes, I'm telling you. But anyway, it kind of did like a D shape. So it's gone from my left to right. I've come up to where they started running, where it got to the top of the ridge. So I was there. It's come around, done a D shape, like a half circle. And when I look to my left, it's coming down through the bushes. And it was like the paddy shape, like thick, but not tall. It was about 6 foot tall, but really, really wide. Like I'm telling you, like 3.5 to 4 foot wide at the shoulders. It was really thick. And you know when you see the walkers do the 50K walking marathon for the Olympics and you think they're not walking fast, but the people are running as fast as they can next to them. That's how fast it was walking. And I could see it for every second gum tree. So every second stride, I could see it. And I just went, shit, that's moving quick. And I'm like, Adam, come over here. It's over here. It's over here. It's come back. So he's come running back. It's taken about a minute to get there. We could still hear it crashing down through all the vines in the bush. So we tried to go down there, but there was too many vines. We're getting caught up and we could hear it crash bang through. So we're looking at all the vines to try and see if we could find hairs, but we couldn't find any. And then it was just gone. But I got a good look at that one and I just went, oh, that was the only Yowie that I've seen.
Wow. So again, the first one that you saw was little. What did you call that? What did you guys...
It's called a Junjudi. So that's an indigenous word for it. And they're the little ones, and they're supposed to be really cheeky, and they'll try and steal stuff from you.
Okay.
And then you've got the big yowies, and then you've got quinkins, which are really tall ones, which come from northern New South Wales that are up to 12 foot tall. But there's different names for the yowie. You've got doolagow is one. And there's many names, like the Native American Indians have got many names for Bigfoot, yeah. Like Sasquatch and Omar. But there's many names, but I can't pronounce them. I'm hopeless at pronouncing some indigenous names. But there is a lot of different names for them. But in Western Australia and other places, they call the Jundjeti, they call them brown jacks. And, you know, the Aboriginals say that, you know, when they're sleeping, and they don't lock their houses up because, you know, they're in the communities there, and they said they come in at night and they can hear them walking around the house, and sometimes they'll touch, you know, the Aboriginals on the shoulder, and when they'll wake up and get startled, and they'll go running out the door. So, so I've actually had one. I had my parabolic that I recorded the wood knocking that I've got now. We're in the Jameson Valley. We're filming for track search for Australia's Bigfoot. So we're in there, and I've got my parabolic set up to this little ridge going down into the valley, and we're down in the valley, but we're 20 meters down from the walking track, but it was like a rock plateau there, and we had it pointed down further down. So one of the boys said, there's something up here moving. So I've got a thermal monocular now, so I've got the thermal out looking for it, and I had that presence of something walking right up behind me. And when I turned around, because I just went, oh shit, I got startled. When I turned around, the actual tripod, and I was about half a meter away from it, so I didn't hit it myself. The tripod was rocking a bit, like something had grabbed it. And then this thing's just gone flying down in the bush. And then Attila and a duo heard it as well. And I said, look at the tripod. It's trying to pinch me stuff, you know. So I've gone, I'm not turning me back on these things again. So I tried to get it on the thermal. I seen something look like a top of a head, but I can't say if it is or not. But, so they're cheeky ones. So the small ones are the Jundjetis. And then you got the Yowies, or they name them Doolagals, and these other words that, like I said, I can't pronounce the names, the indigenous names for them.
Wow. So I'm surprised they don't call the bigger ones the Luke Longleys. How about that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, basketball. Oh.
I mean, come on. Isn't he the only professional Australian basketball player, I think, and made it to the NBA, Luke Longley? I mean, come on. He's famous over here. Is he more famous here than he is in Australia?
Yeah, probably. Basketball is not really big out here. It's like there's a league, but they don't get – like, there's not a huge following. It's like in Australia, you've got to understand, in New South Wales and in Queensland, rugby league is the main game. In summer, and then you got cricket in the winter for the rugby league, and in summer it's cricket, and in Victoria and South Australia, Western Australia, it's Aussie rules, Australian football, completely different game. Aussie rules is like Gaelic football. Have you ever seen Gaelic football?
I know what you're talking about. Told you Australians are just tougher than us guys in Ohio.
In Australian rules and rugby league, there's no helmets or no padding. And where your American football game stops and one team defends and then another part of the team comes in attack. No, our team, you attack and you defend, and it's 40 minutes per half, and the game hardly stops. So you're running around for 40 minutes, and you can't throw the ball forward like you guys do. You can kick it forward and then grab it again. But when you go over the line, you've got to put the football on the ground. It's not like you get over the ground, you know, you guys get touchdown and the ball can be held up and the guy's on his back, but it's a touchdown. But here, if that's the same case, it's not a try, which we call a try. You've got to put the ball down. But there's no padding, and they smash each other. Like, you want to see gladiators hit each other without padding? Look up the biggest hits in rugby league, or the biggest hits in Aussie Australian rules. Yeah,
it's just that's why I know you're going to catch a yowie before I catch Bigfoot because I it sounds to me like you can tackle one of those 3 foot tall ones, like one of the ones trying to steal your stuff.
Put it this way. I got bad ankles, so I can't run. So I must learn how to tackle one. So, you know, it's the only way to survive.
Well, Dan, I have loved to hear about all your experiences and stuff out there. And I feel like I'm blessed that you sent us all these recordings and stuff. And we got to share them with everybody. And I'm going to go up on some of our Patreon and share some of the other pictures and some of the other recordings that we did share on here for our Patreon members. If you're okay with that, I think they'll love that. But I want you to tell everybody that listened to this episode where they can go find, tell them about your YouTube channel again and where they can find some more of your stuff. And if our listeners in Australia don't know about Yowie Dan, tell them how they can get a hold of you and tell you about their own Yowie experiences if they have never told anybody.
Yeah, well, my YouTube channel is Australian Yowie, or Yowie Dan's Australian Yowie. And that's where I got all my videos. I'm not on Facebook. I got off Facebook. I'm just sick of that platform. And so that's the only place I put all my videos. And if anyone wants to message me or anything through Messenger, I still got Messenger under Yowie Dan. I'm happy to have a chat anytime about Yowies. And many people have come in contact with me through that way and told me stories or sent me videos and asking what I think, you know, my opinion. And I always give my honest opinion. And that's the one thing that I will stress, that if I'm out there with someone and they say, "Hey, I heard a wood knock. Did you hear that?" If I didn't hear it, I don't say yes. Like, I'm mm-hmm. like, you have to be like true to yourself with these things and not what we say is bullshit. Because unfortunately, there's one guy out here at the moment in Australia, I won't say his name, and he is just pretty much we're watching where people like Dean Harrison and that go, and when they're getting quality results, he's going to those areas as well, only in the daytime, and he's really disturbing the area for them. And then he's pretty much taking he's taken a reports off a place called Trove, which is an old archive for old newspaper articles. We took one from the 1850s and wrote it up as a red alert latest Yowie encounter. And it's a report from 1850s, and he's been busted now. So, you know, we got people like that here. I'm not sure about you guys in America. There's always people that want to fake stuff and, you know, try to, you know. So that's the unfortunate thing. You've got to be honest about these things. And, you know, I'd be 100% down the line honest with what I do and everything I record. You know, I'll tell everyone the information, and most times – that I've been out there, there's someone else there, two or three people. I don't go out in big groups. It's only small groups, and they hear and see the same things as I do, so they can back me up. Like before we go today, we have got a documentary out. There's two of them. There's one called Track Search for Australia's Bigfoot. You can watch it on Tubi TV for free. And the latest one by my good friend and producer, filmmaker Attila Cowdy. He's made both of these documentaries. And the next one is Tracking the Law. And I'm sure it's available on, I think, Amazon Prime over there in the States, or it's on Microsoft, Google, Vimeo, and a lot of platforms. But yeah, Tracking the Law. I think it's on Apple TV as well. And it is a really fantastic documentary. If you want to see a documentary about the Australian bushfires and the Indigenous people telling their stories, and if the Yowies are still alive after the bushfires came through Australia back in 2019, 2020, just before the pandemic, this documentary is one to watch. It's very different to other documentaries, and anyone that watches it wants to watch it a few more times because it's that good. So please go out there and watch that documentary.
I'll see if I can find a link to it on one of those outlets, and we'll put it in our description of the episode so people can go check it out. So and we'll put your YouTube channel in the description too for people, so they can go go check it out as well. So, but I Dan, I appreciate you coming on and sharing all this stuff, and I'm looking forward to seeing what else, what other kind of evidence you capture in the future, because I do appreciate everybody that's out there doing it, because like I said, I'm too chicken. I'm not going out there and sleeping in there, you know. So, but I appreciate it, and I really thank you for coming on and spending some time with us.
No, it's been great. Man, talking about the Yowies is my passion. That's what's, like Dean said, it's in my blood, and I don't think it's ever going to go. So that's what I like to do. And just to get out there and get one piece of evidence every time we go out is a fantastic feeling. So thanks very much for having me.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the From the Shadows podcast. Until next time. Never shy away from the darkness or what may be lurking in the shadows. We are out.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.